Good afternoon and welcome to Outlook Live. I'm Jean Rourke with the Federal Reserve and I'll be your facilitator. Today's topic is complaints as a supervisory and risk management tool. Our speakers today are Lori Lavaroni and Alinda Murphy. Before turning our call over to our presenters, let me run through our call logistics on slide 2. If you haven't done so yet, click on the webinar link you received after registering, or you can head over to our website at www.consumercomplianceoutlook.org. So let me say that again, it's www.consumercomplianceoutlook.org. There you can find the session material and eventually the archive of the call. And just a quick note on the webinar, we encourage you to listen to the audio through your PC, but if you need a phone option, we do have a limited number available. As for questions, please submit them by clicking on the Ask Question button in the webinar player page. I'd also like to remind you that we're offering continuing professional education credits for attending the session. If you're interested in that, you need to do two things first. Be registered is one, and then the second, you must complete the post-session survey to request that CPE. All right, let me cover our legal language before turning it over to our speakers. The opinions expressed in this presentation are intended for informational purposes and are not formal opinions of nor binding on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. All right, with all that out of the way, I'll turn it over to Lori Lavaroni.
Thank you so much, Jean. This is Lori Lavaroni, and I want to say good morning or afternoon to you, depending on what time zone you're calling in from, and let you know that Alinda, Murphy, and I are really happy to be doing this webinar. So in the second quarter of 2012, the Federal Reserve System published an article in Consumer Compliance Outlook magazine on how consumer complaints fit into a bank's compliance risk management program. But since that time, and I recognize it's been a number of years since that article was published, we continue to hear that community banks feel challenged to make the connection between how complaints fit into their compliance risk management program. So today's presentation will emphasize the continuing importance of complaints in supervision and hopefully help you evaluate the effectiveness of your complaints management function. We'll begin with a big picture supervisory overview of consumer complaints before discussing the goals of our complaint intake function, the investigation models that we employ, and how complaint investigations feed into supervision. We'll spend some of the time today, too, discussing how complaints are used in supervision and the existing guidance related to community bank complaints management. All of this will hopefully provide you with a framework to help you consider your bank's complaints management needs and how to leverage the complaints your organization receives. There are also plans for another Consumer Compliance Outlook Management or Outlook Magazine article to provide more detail on consumer complaints and in supervision than the time that we have for today's webinar. So just want to put that on your radars. Next slide, please. So we're on slide 4. Why does the Federal Reserve care about consumer complaints? Well, we care because they're an important supervisory tool. They're a window into a financial institution. So oftentimes, complaints are the only direct interaction that we as regulators have with bank customers, aside from conducting Community Reinvestment Act interviews. Complaints also help us better understand an institution's policies, practices, even strategic directions that may be undocumented or that we may otherwise miss. Sometimes, too, complaints can reveal practices bank management may not be aware of. For example, practices that may have the effect of discouraging some customers from applying for loans or when customer service staff speak to customers and use language that's quote-unquote off-script. Put another way, a consumer complaint may raise an issue that isn't necessarily obvious or identifiable through our normal examination process. So we, the Federal Reserve System, review consumer complaints not only sent to us, but also those sent to other regulatory agencies. These reviews are done to help us monitor industry-wide consumer protection concerns that may or may not, or that may signal a need for supervisory or regulatory guidance. Customers complain when they believe something has gone wrong, when they believe that there's enough of a problem that it's worth, one, contacting their financial institution, or two, finding out who their regulatory agency is and bothering to write to that regulatory agency for help. So just to learn a little bit about who we have in the audience today and to get us flexing our polling muscles, I'm going to turn it over to Jean for our first polling question.
All right. Thanks so much, Lori. Okay. Grab your mouse and let's have a bit of interaction right here. I have posed our first polling question, and I'll read that aloud to you. How many complaints did your institution receive, investigate, and resolve in 2017? And I'll read you the options as well. The first option is less than 10. Second is 10 to 50. Option C is 51 to 100. D is 101 to 250. And the last option is greater than 250 or greater. So I want to make sure that everyone has enough time to take a peek at that. We just want to know how many complaints your institution received, investigated, and resolved in 2017, with the options varying from 10 to over 250. So I will just dance for a moment and make sure that everyone has a chance to respond to that polling question. And with that, I'm still seeing a bunch of results coming in, so I'm not going to close it quite yet. All right, still coming in pretty heavy. So, all right, at this point, I'm going to go ahead and stop that poll. And, Lori, I'm going to show the results. It might take just a second for those results to pop up on your screen. But what I see is it looks like we had about 34% say 250 plus, so that last option, and then 31% said less than 10, and then the third ranked was 10 to 50, that second option. So, Lori, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. Thanks, Jean. And it's good. I just wanted us to get practice using these polling questions, but it's also good for us to know a little bit about our audience. So I'll give you a little perspective. In 2017, the Federal Reserve System's Complaint Intake Center received a little more than 10,000 written consumer complaints and just a shave over 20,000 inquiries from consumers. So I'm going to hand things over to Alinda, who will provide an overview of the Federal Reserve System's complaint function. Next slide, please.
Hello, everyone. We are on slide 5. This slide shows the system's three complaint investigation goals, and they are, first, consumer protection. We're looking at consumer harm in all of its aspects. Second, customer service. We want to be timely, consistent, and thorough in our responses to consumers. And finally, although no less, supervisory insights. We use complaints data when we're looking at bank and industry trends and customer pain points. Next slide, please. Our definition of a complaint is broad, but it is comparable to that used by other federal financial regulatory agencies. We investigate complaints against any entity under our supervision and from any source. So we consider complaints from consumers and companies, from customers and non-customers, from community groups, elected officials, etc. A complaint may be a specific allegation or a general comment about an institution. For instance, a bank doesn't seem to process payments timely. It may be a whistleblower. Whistleblower complaints are often from individuals requesting anonymity because they work for the bank, or they may be bank customers that fear reprisal from the bank. They're taken seriously, and their confidentiality is protected. There are exceptions to our complaint definition that may not apply to financial institutions. Some relate to our jurisdiction and others to customer identification and fraud concerns. For instance, we don't investigate orally submitted complaints. And in part, that's because we need to provide the institution sufficient data to verify that the individual filing the complaint has a right to the information that's being requested. Nonetheless, we maintain documentation on all complaints and inquiries that we receive, without exception. Next slide, please. We are on slide 7, and let's talk briefly about the FRS Complaints Program. It was established in 1976. Our intake process is comparable to that of other federal and state regulatory agencies. A substantial majority of FRS investigated complaints are received through Federal Reserve Consumer Help, which was established in 2007. As with our sister federal banking agencies, we have chosen to centralize intake, and the reason for this is we want to provide a consistent consumer experience. All complaints are funneled through Federal Reserve Consumer Help unless they are specialty complaints. Specialty complaints usually originate through the Board of Governors, Congressional Liaison's Office, the Board Chairperson, etc. More information about the complaints intake process is on the Federal Reserve ConsumerHelp.gov website, including some of the complaint investigation exceptions. More information on those. Now let's turn it back over to Jean for a polling question. Jean?
All right. Thank you so much, Alinda. And I will pose our second polling question for our participants today. So grab your mouse so you can respond at your leisure. I will read our question aloud and give you plenty of time to respond. The question is, what is the source of most of your institution's complaints? And there are three options. The first option is individuals. The second is state and federal agencies. And the third is social media or websites, for example, the Better Business Bureau. So I will stall just a bit to make sure people can see the polling and respond. I'm getting a lot of results at this time, so that's good. So I'll just remind you, the question is, what is the source of most of your institution's complaints? And then there are those three options. One is individuals, two is state and federal agencies, and the third is social media or website. So since we are continuing to get a whole bunch of responses, I'm just going to stall for a couple of more seconds. I want to mention that there are a couple people saying that they can't see the polling questions, and there is some difference if you are streaming through your computer or if you're listening to our voices over the phone. So there may be just a slight lag on that. So if you just have some patience, it should pop up on your screen. All right, so still getting a bunch of responses. I'm just going to pause for another second or two. All right, they're slowing down at this point, so I'm going to go ahead and stop that poll. And, Alinda, I'm going to show the results to you. Hopefully that box pops up on your screen, but if it doesn't, I'm going to let you know that 90% of our participants said that individuals was the source for them, and then it was just about a tie on state and federal agencies and social media or websites. So I hope that was enough information, and Alinda, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, and if we may have the next slide. We are on slide 8. And this slide shows the general district process for investigating consumer complaints that we receive from Federal Reserve Consumer Help. It's pretty straightforward. As Lori indicated before, we are expecting a companion Compliance Outlook magazine article. And based on your feedback, it may contain more information about the district complaint investigation process. After our investigations, we draft a closing letter to the consumer addressing each issue raised and stating whether there was a violation of the federal consumer protection laws or regulations, or if there was a bank error. We also explain any recourse the consumer may have, and we strive to make the complaint a learning experience for the consumer. The purpose of this part, this brief part of the presentation, was to state that the Federal Reserve System has policies and procedures clearly defining what we consider a complaint and the investigation and closure processes that we used. The ultimate goal is to provide a fair, independent view of the consumer's concerns. This is the key to understanding the scope of our complaint function and how complaints fit into supervisory events. Now we're going to turn it over to Laurie to discuss how complaints are used in supervision, and we will ask for the next slide. Laurie?
Okay. Thanks, Alinda. So we will, sometimes there's a little delay in the slide movement. We will be on slide number 9. So after a complaint is resolved, unless it's investigated during a supervisory event, it may be used as a potential area of supervisory focus. So this chart is just kind of showing you that overlap and showing you the differences between a complaint investigation and the use of that complaint or complaints as part of our supervisory process. So I guess what I want folks to understand is that a complaint can be a single test of regulatory compliance and consumer harm. You know, it will focus on what the consumer's issue is, and though it may result in finding a problem affecting several customers, the focus will remain on that particular complainant or consumer, and that specific issue or issues that they raise. So complaints are reviewed during all types of supervisory events, and those supervisory events are going to determine the breadth will determine the breadth of the complaint issues, and we'll review whether a complaint tells us, the Federal Reserve, something about the bank's strategic focus or inherent compliance risk. We also monitor consumer complaints on an ongoing basis between examinations, and then perhaps more formally during our mid-cycle monitoring, and that another way to look at that is just a compliance risk management kind of health check in between exams. But what we're doing in those ongoing and during our formal mid-cycle monitoring is we're verifying the continued adequacy or soundness of the bank's compliance risk management program. So during the actual compliance examinations, examiners routinely ask whether the institution has received any consumer compliance-related complaints. We'll also check our own that we've received. But bottom line is examiners will use the complaints for a couple of reasons. One, to evaluate product management and materiality, and to apply a risk-focused approach to supervision as these examiners will focus on complaints about products, services, and areas that are considered material to the institution and or that may pose the highest risk to the institution. And that could be in the fair lending realm, UDAP-related complaints. Bottom line, complaints are used in determining a bank's awareness of or sensitivity to consumer harm. Next slide, please. So complaints can reveal areas of heightened inherent risk, though a bank may mitigate that risk through robust training, controls, and review. So the Federal Reserve System's Community Bank Risk-Focused Consumer Compliance Program guidance, and that's found in CA Letter 13-19, states that complaints and their pertinence must be considered during any supervisory event as the examiner reviews product management and for all, you know, and also for fair lending and UDAP purposes. So I mentioned earlier in the presentation that complaints are a window into a bank's operations. They are. They're a view into consumer perceptions of and potential problems related to bank products, services, and operations. So specifically, complaints can show changes that may have occurred in a bank's focus and may reveal possible cracks in an institution's compliance risk management armor. They'll make us aware that the bank may be going in a new direction or about any new products or services the bank's offering. And so that would mean emerging risks or issues. They'll show consumer interaction sore spots, for lack of a better word, and management's awareness, sensitivity to, and proactivity in managing those potential risk areas. And lastly, they can reveal risk in any of the four compliance risk management pillars, you know, senior management and board oversight, policies, procedures, training, monitoring and MIS, and internal controls. So although complaints are considered as we scope examinations, not all complaints are considered material or quote-unquote pertinent or would affect the scope of an examination. So the Federal Reserve guidance requires that examiners document any pertinent consumer complaint activity, including a discussion about the quantity and types of complaints and how the institutions resolve them. So let me step back for a minute. You might be asking yourself, what does Lori mean by pertinent? Well, the short answer is it depends, and I say that not to be flip. I'm saying it because it's true. It really depends. It depends somewhat on the bank's environment, its business focus, and also the volume, nature, and outcomes of those complaints. So as for the quantity of complaints received by a financial institution, let me put some perspective on this. A large volume of complaints related to a single issue will matter. However, as we consider substance over volume, we will consider substance over volume. And note, too, though, that receiving a single complaint may still be considered pertinent and may reveal unaddressed risk or potential systemic issues. We're going to look at the root cause of a complaint. And also how, more importantly, too, is how the bank managed and addressed its response to the consumer and to the root cause, if any. Next slide, please. We will eventually be on slide 11 when our computers catch up. So I wanted to delve a little further into the idea of pertinence and give some examples of complaint pertinence as considered during our supervisory events. This slide shows some of the issues that often lend pertinence to a complaint, regardless of the complaint volume. This doesn't mean that there's automatically a problem, but rather that inherent risk may be higher in the affected areas. So take, for example, UDAP or discrimination issues. Complaint investigations related to these issues have been vetted within the system and can affect examiner outlook on a supervisory event or an examination. The next area would be violations of law. So when a complaint investigation determines that a bank violated a federal consumer protection law or regulation, the complaint would be considered pertinent. This is because the complaint identified not only inherent risk, but an actual compliance program weakness. Bank errors. So I'd say bank errors. I'm not talking about clerical errors that may be done inconsistently. I'm talking about errors or clerical errors, especially if they're done consistently. So sometimes a complaint detects a bank error that's not an actual violation, but reflects negatively on the bank's compliance risk management program or could pose some reputational risk. So again, these aren't violations of law or regulation, but errors. They also may be areas where the regulations haven't yet caught up. For example, you know, think about remote deposit capture or person-to-person payments. Those are what come immediately to mind for me. But regardless, all areas are going to present opportunities for supervisory staff to consult with bank management on what may be an appropriate procedural change to prevent or mitigate consumer harm. And the last area I wanted to touch on, too, was related to Community Reinvestment Act or CRA comments. So generally, CRA comments must be held by a bank in its CRA public file for review during our CRA examinations. But what if a CRA comment mentions redlining, and not only related to low or moderate income areas, but implying redlining on a prohibited basis? I raise this just to say that CRA comments may be pertinent to other parts of an examination, and examiners will document and consider any non-CRA implications. So as we consider complaint pertinence during supervisory events, we're looking at root causes and any patterns or systemic issues. Sorry, I'm back. I lost you for a minute. So I'm back to, as we consider complaint pertinence during supervisory events, we're looking at root causes and any patterns or systemic issues indicating that there may be more widespread consumer harm or perhaps compliance program weaknesses. Complaint investigations are narrowly designed to focus on resolving a particular consumer's particular issue or issues or allegations. But the supervision process...
I'm not sure if we've lost you, Lori, or if you are having some technical issues. Are you there? All right, I'm going to ask our operator to try to reconnect Lori for us.
Jean, I am here.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you, Lori.
I apologize for that. Complaint investigations are narrowly designed to focus on resolving the customer's allegations. However, the supervision process is a widescreen view of a bank's compliance risk management program, and we use complaints as one of our tools. So if I leave you with anything, remember that the number of complaints should not be the sole driver of pertinence. I just want to take a minute because we did have a question that came in that talked about asking if the Federal Reserve believes there's an appropriate complaint rate or range of complaints that would demonstrate an institution's ability to maintain a sufficient complaints program. Again, I think simply put, volume doesn't matter. It may not matter. And so it's really going to be based on the institution and their business needs. Okay, we're on to the next slide, and we are on slide 12. So as you may be aware, the FFIEC compliance rating system requires consideration of how a bank's complaints program operates. It's one of the 12 rating determination factors. The rating system approaches consumer complaints on two levels. The first level deals with how responsive the bank is in addressing complaints it receives. So that's the kind of the consumer focus aspect. The second is the bank focus aspect and considers how well the bank integrates complaints into its compliance risk management structure. And that includes making compliance program changes as complaints identify inherent risks. So put another way, under this rating system, the attributes of a highly effective consumer complaint program include three things. Number one is having policies and procedures for defining and addressing consumer complaints. Two, performing complaint investigations thoroughly and promptly. And three, incorporating complaint findings into those resulting in consumer harm or customer service issues and incorporating those into the bank's overall compliance risk management program. And I think, again, the key takeaway here that I want you to walk away with is that an effective compliance risk management program is proactive. So I want to turn it over to Jean for our last polling question.
Okay, thank you so much, Lori. And I will pose our last polling question. I have gotten a number of individuals that said they are having a hard time seeing those questions or they're not popping up for them. And I just want to let you know that there is a delay for individuals that are streaming this event. So please do be patient. I will say that if you are listening via the phone, your slides will sync up if you use there's a gray gear up above the speaker window there, and if you select the phone option, that will sync up your slides with your audio if you're using the phone. If you're streaming, it's the flash option. So I just want to be clear with that. So the polling question should have popped up on your screen, hopefully, and it is, which of these does your institution consider pertinent for compliance risk management? And there are five options. The first is number of complaints about a product or service. Option B is whether a complaint review found a violation of law or bank error. Option C, that the complaint was forwarded to the institution by a regulator. Option D is issues related to poor customer service. Or E, all of the above. So which of these options below does your institution consider pertinent for compliance risk management? And we are getting a whole bunch of responses at this time. I won't read back through what the options are, but we are looking for which of these does your institution consider pertinent for compliance risk management. All right, still getting a whole bunch of responses, so I'm just going to stall for another second or two. All right, and all right, we're at a pretty good amount based on our total number of individuals who have joined. So I'm going to stop that polling question, and I'm going to show the results. And all right, Lori, I will share with you, in case that box didn't pop up on your screen, I'll let you know that 91% of our participants who responded said that it was the last option, all of the above. And then they were all 1%. Except for letter B, which was whether a complaint review found a violation of law or bank error. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, even with all my technical difficulties, this audience listened. This was not a trick question. There was really no right answer. Any or all of them are pertinent, and it depends on your institution situation. So I was glad that the majority of folks answered with that. 91%, yay. So good job. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Alinda now, who will walk us through the last portion of today's webinar, Complaints in Compliance Risk Management. Next slide, please.
All right. Thank you, Lori. And we are on slide 13. For the remaining presentation, let's visualize a possible bank complaint program framework based on all of the existing guidance, including CA 16-8, that's the FFIEC compliance rating system that Lori just talked about, CA 04-2, that's the FDIC FRS interagency UDAP guidance, and CA 13-19 on risk-focused compliance supervision. This framework will also leverage that second quarter 2012 Consumer Compliance Outlook magazine article on how to view complaints as a tool for assessing your institution CRM program using the four compliance pillars. By the way, all of these tools and links to them are in the references slide. Never fear, we're going to break down this very busy picture showing a complaints process from the receipt of the complaint to the incorporation of the complaint into the CRM program. We are hoping that this will help guide the discussion at your bank regarding complaints management. Of course, this framework is scalable to meet the needs of your bank regardless of its size or complexity. By the way, we've worked into this model and into our discussion a lot of the questions that we received from you before the presentation. Next slide, please. As an aside, everyone benefits from good complaint management. Your customers benefit because their issues are addressed and any consumer harm is resolved. However, there are customer intangibles such as satisfaction with being heard and feeling valued. Your employees benefit from clear complaint escalations that result in there being fewer dissatisfied customers and message inconsistencies. And the whole organization benefits from early detection of issues, increased regulatory compliance, satisfied customers, and protecting your bank's image and brand. Now, let's break down that busy chart. And if you would go to the next slide, please. We are on slide 15. All banks get complaints. To have an effective complaint management program, a bank first needs to define what comprises a complaint and then discover all the ways that complaints enter the bank. Now, defining a complaint is really going to determine the breadth and scope of your complaint management process. As a start, consider the guidance in CA 13-19, which contains a lot of references to complaints and specifically mentions the following types of complaints as early indicators of fair lending and UDAP concerns. First, complaints directly to bank staff. Then complaints, inquiries, or investigations by the Federal Reserve or other federal and state agencies. Concerns raised by formal and informal contacts with your communities, lawsuits by any party, private or government, complaints generated through internet websites or social media, Better Business Bureau, Facebook, Twitter, so on, media articles raising concerns about the institution's processes. But let's go further. Let's consider all of the windows and doors through which you receive customer and non-customer communications. Consider departments, yes, even human resources. Consider channels, that's branches, divisions, offices, call centers, third-party service providers, and other ways that complaints may be received. Also, check the contact information on bank receipts, email templates, disclosures, websites, lobby notices, even in paper telephone books. You may be surprised at all of the different doors you're asking customers to reach you through. During one complaint investigation, we found that the customer was given at least two ways through two different bank departments to express concerns about one type of transaction. Now, the purpose of this exercise would be to understand where complaints and consumer concerns may originate so that they can be properly handled or escalated, or so that accurate and consistent messages may be given. Now, we'd like to give a special word regarding third-party service providers. It is appropriate to document and monitor complaints your service providers obtain from your customers. It's appropriate to ensure that bank contracts specify the manner in which consumers may file complaints and that the bank has ready access to that complaint, those complaints. Also, as an aside, you may consider what protections you have under service level agreements. For instance, what recourse do you have if your customers complain about disclosures or other problems and the service provider minimizes or won't correct the issue? Getting back to windows and doors, the last thing you want is for your customer to contact a supervisory agency or the media because the bank was unresponsive or the bank kept losing the complaint. After you've defined and identified complaints, you may wish to ensure that there are proper controls around the investigation and resolution of complaints. For instance, make sure that there are proper escalation points for complaints subject to specific federal consumer protection laws with error resolution timeframes and procedures. Verify which people at the bank should own specific types of complaints. For complaints not subject to the laws with specific error resolution provisions, bank policies and procedures should outline the process and a reasonable timeframe for complaint investigations and resolution. For training, all bank staff, management, and officers should understand what the bank considers a complaint and proper complaint escalations. I've heard that some state member banks have developed training to help staff understand when a consumer is complaining. Now, this isn't overkill when you consider that a customer concern may not even sound like a complaint. For instance, I was wondering why late charges are being assessed when I was not late on my loan payment. That may be a polite customer complaining that late charges were assessed in error. Data collection provides account accessibility and accountability. Having in one place all of the concerns raised allows the bank to see patterns and monitor the effectiveness of complaints management. How an institution chooses to do this should be based on the size and complexity of its operations, and a simple tool may be as or more effective than a complex one. So, for instance, a small community bank may not need to have a trending tool or even an electronic tool if it receives few complaints. Consider the feasibility of collecting for all complaints. Who, that's the customer information. What, that's the complaint description from the customer's viewpoint. Where, that's the bank branch, office, division, channel. And when, that's the date the complaint was received. And later we're going to discuss the value of collecting other data points. Next slide, please. We're on slide 16. As you think of right-sizing complaint policies and procedures, please consider these cautions. First, there is no requirement of how an institution defines a complaint. Thus, you may choose not to call Regulation E error resolution issues complaints. The question, though, is whether by doing so you can effectively manage complaints holistically and understand how Regulation E errors fit into your overall compliance risk management program. Second, this leads to a caution regarding overly decentralized complaint intake and management. Overly decentralized complaint intake may result in less overall control and accountability, including the inability to monitor escalations and prevent duplication of effort. Inconsistent customer service and messaging, and investigation and documentation inconsistencies. However, there may be advantages to a less centralized complaints management system for some banks, especially those with simpler organization structures and offering limited products and services. Third, be alert to the effect of policies or practices that unintentionally incentivize reporting a low number of complaints, especially if you're tracking complaints by channel, by office, branch, division, etc. A lack of or few complaints does not necessarily equate to good customer service or a good CRM program. If nothing else, just remember that the guidance that we have does not honor receiving few complaints. Next slide, please. FFIEC compliance rating guidance states that effective complaint management programs handle complaints thoroughly and promptly. To be thorough, the bank will need to make sure that its complaints are properly escalated and that all of the customer's needs are addressed. This will require you to see the issues from the customer's perspective. Consider restating to the customer in the closing letter what you thought the customer's concerns were. By the way, this is what we do in our closing letters at the Federal Reserve System. In addition, thoroughness requires that the customer, if harmed due to a bank error or a violation of the federal consumer protection laws, is made whole. CA 04-2, that's on UDAP, states that complaint investigations should consider whether there has been a UDAP issue and consumer harm. To better understand the importance of understanding of in performing UDAP analyses and on complaints, consider the March 3, 2013 Outlook Live presentation, UDAP Analyses, Examination, Case Studies, and Emerging Risks. You'll note that several of the cases noted there were from complaint investigations or reviews. When it comes to prompt promptness. And as you're building your complaint procedures, think of timeliness not only from compliance with regulatory requirements, such as error resolution provisions, but also from the perspective of the channel through which the complaint is received. Customers may expect and do expect faster responses and escalations when submitting complaints electronically. Next slide, please. We are on slide 18. On this slide are additional considerations related to responsiveness. First, we have discussed that ensuring proper complaint escalations is important for investigation thoroughness and timeliness. Second, complaints should not be closed without understanding the customer's concerns. And if it's difficult to understand the customer's concerns or if you are unsure, outreach may be needed. Third, as you're developing your complaint procedures, consider how customer expectations should affect response timeframes, such as if a customer sends email or makes a Facebook post about a problem. Some banks manage the expectation of an immediate resolution by sending the customer an acknowledgement after receiving an electronic customer complaint, including a social media posting. And that acknowledgement often states the bank's concern regarding the issues that the customer raised. It informs the consumer of the desire to resolve the situation, and it either tells the consumer that bank staff will be contacting him or her, or it asks the customer to name, or it asks the customer to contact a named bank staff person, providing that contact information or requesting private messaging. Let's pause to address a question we received before the session about complaints from vigilante groups or sovereign citizen types of claims. No complaint process can handle every type of issue that arises. Some issues require consulting with your attorney to formulate appropriate and consistent responses that hopefully will mitigate legal and reputation risk. Next slide, please. A bank complaint management program is incomplete absent integration of the complaint into its overall compliance risk management program. The bank should determine the actual and potential impact of what occurred with the complaint, not only for that individual customer, but for other customers as well and for itself. Consider whether the customer's accounts or services may be impacted or other customers by what happened surrounding the complaint. If a customer was assessed a late charge and error, how many other customers were assessed late charges and error? Was the issue limited to a certain type of loan, or is it a software problem potentially affecting an entire portfolio? The impact may be that the bank violated a federal law or regulation, or it may be reputation risk. Complaints pose reputation risk that may be large scale, like becoming the poster child of a bad banking practice, or on a small level, such as an unhappy customer speaking negatively regarding the bank or its brand to 10 friends and relatives. Someone once told me that complaints are like symptoms, like the blooms on a plant. A complaint investigation looks at the bloom and the reason for the symptom, similar to the plant's foliage and top root layer. But it takes a root cause analysis to go deeper and remove the taproot so that the problem is fully resolved and does not easily recur. Toyota founder Sakichi Toyota had a method for root cause analysis that you may find helpful called the 5 Whys method. And it requires asking why a problem happened at least 5 times to drill down to the root cause instead of just the peripheral reasons. Just keep asking why till you can't go any further. Next slide, please, because we're going to look at an example of how this works. On slide 20, Think of a case where a customer stated he didn't receive a deposit hold notice at deposit, and that is caused, and that caused the customer to believe that funds would be immediately available, and it resulted in overdraft fees. During the investigation, the bank found out that there was a Regulation CC violation because the teller was aware that a hold was going to be placed, although no notice was given. The bank refunded the overdraft fees, and the customer was sent a letter apologizing for the error and informing him that the account was reimbursed. But let's look beyond the complaint and the reason for the issue to the root cause of what happened. On the slide is the analysis that the compliance officer performed. It says, why did it happen? The teller was told not to provide notices. Why? The back office would send the notice later. Why? Well, there was a process change. Why? Because operations noted a high volume of teller notice errors. Their hold notices were wrong. Why? Ineffective teller training and coaching. And you can go on from there, but this type of analysis may lead to multiple root causes needing consideration. For example, in this case, we could go into five whys as to why training was ineffective. As with all root cause analysis methods, it takes practice. Next slide, please. The complaint management program should fully incorporate any lessons learned from the investigation, from impact analysis, and from root cause analysis into the CRM program. After analyzing complaint impacts and root causes, decisions should be made regarding necessary action steps, if any. It may be that the complaint identifies compliance or reputation risk that your organization is willing to accept. Picking up on the topic of data collection, after complaint analysis, documentation may be completed with the bank's response to the customer, complaint impact, and stating the root cause. At this point, especially if you get a large number of complaints, and from what we saw with the first poll, many of you do, you may be wondering which complaints to focus on for risk management. What complaints should get the most CRM program attention? So we're going to give you a short answer, and then we're going to give you a reasonable, scalable answer. The short answer is all of them. Even the oddest sounding complaint, properly investigated, may be a compliance risk gem. So for example, what if your bank's colors were red and green on its website and on some of its disclosures? And you have a customer that complains, hey, I can't understand these disclosures. I can't see them. Well, you treat the customer to the five whys. You start asking why, and by the fifth why, you determine that the person is colorblind on the red-green scale. In such a case, the bank should consider the impact of what it has learned on not only that customer, but other customers and to the institution as a whole. What is the compliance risk of some customers being unable to identify and understand disclosures? Now, let's go to a reasonable answer for that question, and that is consider pertinence. Consider the quantity of complaints in a certain area, types, and results. Decide an internal prioritization, keeping in mind the categories that we discussed for supervision. That's UDAP, discrimination, violations of law, bank errors, and CRA comments that may lead into other issues. Those categories focus on consumer harm, while remembering that a single complaint may find a material issue. Remember that the number of complaints should not be the sole driver of pertinence considerations. That would be a purely reactive approach to complaints. A better approach is considering volume as well as actual or potential consumer harm. It's not stated on the slide, so please write in your handout customer service. The Consumer Compliance Rating System mentions complaints related to customer service, and as you no doubt know, a large number of complaints really deal with customer service issues instead of issues covered by the federal consumer protection laws and regulations. When you consider a customer service complaint, look from the compliance risk to customer service and back again. And what may seem like customer service issues initially may eventually look like possible compliance issues or issues that result in consumer harm. Remember the colorblindness issue we just discussed. Also consider the fact that the consumer has bothered to write to you or to your supervisory agency, so it must have some type of importance. Of course, proper complaint oversight by bank management is critical to ensuring the organization has a holistic view of risk. Management should be aware of the numbers and types of complaints received, why they occurred, the risk they posed, action plans to address risk, and action plan statuses. Next slide, please. And I'm noting that we have 2 minutes left on the presentation, so I will fly through this next series. As you consider integrating lessons learned from complaints into your CRM program, please consider that closing complaints before determining the root cause closes the door on what may be an important risk management tool. Second, use caution when using an internal risk-based compliance rating, complaint rating system that categorizes complaints too generally, does not consider consumer protection laws, does not consider especially UDAP or bank errors, or that does not consider pertinence. A practice of underestimating customer service issues may be a problem. Customer service issues may reveal customer harm in consumer speak. With regard to near misses related to customer service issues, a customer stating that she wasn't pleased that bank commented unfavorably on her apparel or jewelry, or if he states that he was treated disrespectfully by a teller, that may reveal deeper issues that you'd want to investigate. Complaints are a valuable tool for identifying potential areas for improvement. They are free feedback and can even be an effective marketing tool. We have stories of banks increasing customer loyalty by handling a complaint well or gaining a new customer through a complaint even. Next slide, please. We are on slide 23. And this is what we hope you have concluded as a result of this presentation. It may be hard to overestimate the usefulness of complaints. Consider and welcome them as feedback from your customers and roads towards continuous organization improvement. An effective complaint management program can transform complaints into tools to build a better CRM program and excellent customer service. Next slide, please. Our presentation ends with this slide showing the resources used for the presentation, and I just want to say thank you for your attention. We're going to turn the presentation back over to Lori.
Thanks, Alinda. So I realize this webinar is slated to end now, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, but I did have some additional information to share and just wanted to extend it by another minute or so. So if you have other things to do and need to leave the webinar, feel free to, but we'd love for you to stay connected. And the reason being, I've been looking at lots of the questions that have been coming in, and they're all actually really good ones. Some of them just made me smile. But one question theme that came through from a lot of different participants related to best practices or approaches to incorporating social media into, you know, monitoring complaints, or even when, let's say, a customer will post on the institution's Facebook page or their Facebook page and it gets out somehow, you know, this is a lousy bank or a derogatory comment in some way. So you know, while the board, I just want to be clear, the board hasn't published best practices for social media in consumer complaints, but I did want to take a minute to just share with the audience some practices that I have seen through my experience. So some things I could think of immediately are, one is to monitor your Facebook or your social media presence and consider it, you know, an automatic alert or information that you can glean automatically from a consumer or customer. I've seen institutions that use social media or have that strong presence acknowledge those types of comments quickly. Oftentimes what they do is they will not answer it publicly. What they'll do is say, you know, thank you, John Doe or Jane Doe, please personal message us so that we can follow up. You know, just that's also to make sure that they're talking to who they, a customer, and who that person is who they say they are. And that way you're taking it off that platform. And I've also seen institutions document social media complaints as you would any other complaint, and just kind of go through those steps that Alinda and I have walked through today to ensure that they're incorporated as pertinent or relevant and appropriate into your compliance risk management program. So, you know, there's a lot of really good questions that we received, and unfortunately, we don't have time to go through many more of them, but please know that we appreciate this time that you've spent with us, and we will use the questions likely in a future Consumer Compliance Outlook magazine article. So thank you very much for your time, and I'm going to turn it back over to Jean.
All right. Thank you so much, Lori. And I want to just note, we will be sending an email with the link to our survey, so please do just take a moment to fill that out. That should come to you in just about 15 minutes or so. And we want to read every single response just so that we can make our sessions better based on your feedback. So please do respond when you can. I'd like to thank our presenters, Lori and Alinda, today, and the entire Outlook Live team for their time. As a quick reminder, remember to check our website, www.consumercomplianceoutlook.org, for the archive of this call and for information on upcoming sessions. Thanks for joining us today. This concludes today's Outlook Live webinar. Enjoy the rest of your day.